Welcome to That Front Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, it feels like every time we talk on this podcast, we're either going one of two ways. Everything's great for two games, everything's bad for two games. And this one happens to be an everything's bad for two games.
The way you set that up makes it sound like we're the problem. Like we're like,
I wouldn't think that we are, but you know, I guess anything's possible.
Listen, I'm wondering, you know, at this point, two losses in a row, you know, we're kind of getting to the point where if this isn't the turning point, then when, you know, is what it kind of feels like. And I mean, we've kind of at various points of the season talked about, oh, this, you know, this guy had a bad game or this guy had a bad game. These were team efforts in these losses. And it just kind of feels like the inevitable is coming up here the next few weeks.
Yeah. So after winning two games at home against the Eastern Conference's two best teams, 3-0 against Carolina, 3-2 in a shootout against Tampa Bay, they get pumped 5-0 in Edmonton, lose 3-1 in Winnipeg in a game where they actually played pretty well. I would say at 5-on-5, they allowed two power play goals and then an empty netter. So, you know, the score probably looked worse than the actual play was in front. So I didn't really mind that one too much, but we're at the point of the season where the results are really all that matters. I think early on when they were struggling, you know, I wrote, I'm sure other people did too, that their underlying numbers were pretty good, that if they kept playing this way, that they would be okay. It's just their goaltending needed to improve, and their goaltending improved, but their play did not remain at the same level. So we didn't see those results finally come to fruition, given their underlying numbers. Now it's not so much about, hey, waiting for some mean regression. It's waiting for results if they are going to make a push. The other side of the coin is, you know, if you're waiting for bad results, that's also could be something that a lot of fans out there are rooting for, just to see, you know, what happens at the trade deadline, and then also how high of a draft pick these Blues can get.
Yeah, the idea of reuniting the Stenberg brothers is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I mean, it's funny. You know, every time I talk to Otto and say, hey, how's your brother doing? He's, oh, he's doing all right. He's doing fine, you know? And like, I don't truly have a sense of just how special he can be, because I think, you know, Otto's seen it his entire life. He just sees his brother. He's like, he's doing okay. He's Ivar, you know? So I think Ivar did do an interview recently with an outlet. I forget what outlet it was, but someone asked him, hey, like, how appealing would it be to play with your brother in St. Louis? And he said, yeah, I mean, that would be the dream, you know? Like, so it's not something that is off his mind, right? And of course, we also know there's Gavin McKenna at the top of the draft, Keaton Verhoff, a defenseman, 6'4" right-hander in North Dakota. So there are some good options at the top of the draft if the Blues end up in the top three. And right now, you know, the 31st in the league, second pick right now would be that. And after the draft lottery, the lowest they could be would be 4. That would be the highest draft pick they've had since Alex Petrangelo in 2008. So we could be looking at something that hasn't happened in almost 20 years. And even if they are at the top of the draft, if they're number one, they win the lottery, it would be the highest save pitch since Eric Johnson in 2006. So that would be actually 20 years. So we're looking at a season that, you know, maybe accidentally could change the franchise. And it's just one of those things where some good, some bad, and it kind of depends on how you look at it on the whole, I would say.
Yeah, glass half full or glass half empty, depending on, you know, your type of perspective.
Short-term, long-term too, right? Like, I think last year when they made the playoffs, it was a huge thing because you had so much playoff experience for these young kids, and that would be the same thing again this year, but weighed against a top 3-4 pick, it's different than last year weighing it against what number 16 or 17
16 17 yeah, yeah. And, well, the you know, the other thing too, you had a good story this week looking at the odds, you know, in both directions, you know, what would it take to make a playoff run, even though they are, you know, in terms of points within striking distance. Like, not only would it take the miracle run of last year and then some, then you run into Colorado. Like, realistically, where you're at, even without some kind of sell-off, that, you know, we're kind of at a point where a decision needs to be made. And I think that was kind of what your story was saying, which was spot on. I mean, I said turning point earlier, but it feels like we're going to start seeing some moves soon one way or the other.
Sure. Yeah. And so just to lay it out, I mean, right now we're recording this on Friday morning, and the second wild card in the Western Conference is Seattle. They have 53 points in 49 games. That puts them on pace for 89 points. The Blues, in order to get to 89 points, would need 43 points in the remaining 32 games, which is a 109 pace, roughly a 21-10-1 record. There's only two teams this year that have had an entire season's worth at 109. Even if you look at last year's stretch, their best 32-game stretch was, I believe, 46 points. But that's with a second wild card around 89 points, and we know history tells us that that generally arrives closer to 95. So if you need an extra 6 points, you're now looking at 49 points in 32 games. And that was something that, you know, even last year's Blues, the miraculous run that they went on, they didn't do that. So you need something even greater than last year just to put you in the second wild card spot. That's just to tie in points, really. And then you're looking at winning a tiebreaker again for the right to face Colorado. And they look like a machine right now. And, you know, as I did mention in the story, 2019 Tampa tied the wins record in the NHL, 62 wins. They got swept by Columbus in the first round. 2023 Boston, they set the points record in the NHL. They lost in the first round. So it's not like they can't be beaten, but my goodness, I would not want to see Colorado in the first round, regardless of what the other teams in their position did previously.
Yeah, of course, you know, if you get on enough of a heater to get there, what did you say, 109 point pace, run that over the last few weeks of the season, maybe you're not scared of anybody, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, that's what we thought last year too, right?
You're right.
They went on that run. Maybe you could make the argument they should have beaten Winnipeg in the first round, but they didn't, and they lost in the first round, and then they probably wouldn't have beat Dallas in the second round anyway. So it is one of those decisions that, you know, it's coming. Doug Armstrong, when he spoke to some of the reporters in St. Louis in December, he mentions, I'm listening on everyone. You know, he said, I'm listening on everyone, but I'm not going to sell at 50 cents on the dollar. That's just not going to be part of the game plan here. And, you know, we've talked about it before. Listening on everyone doesn't quite mean everyone. But there has been some reports out there that, you know, of a potential move that includes Robert Thomas. And I don't know that the Blues are out there shopping him per se, but I do think that the other teams know where they're at. They see what Doug Armstrong said, that what he wants to do, and they're calling about his best player that may or may not fit into this next age group. I think, you know, 2 years ago when we talked about this retool, it was centered around Thomas and Kyrou. Like, that was the age group. They were 25 years old. They were going to be the ones to build around. And now whenever Doug Armstrong talks about what he wants to bring in, what he wants to add to the core, he talks about young 20s guys that fit the age group of Joel Hofer, Jake Neighbors, Philip Broberg, Dylan Holloway, Logan Mailloux, you know, plus those prospects that they have in the NHL right now, Jimmy Snuderud, Dalibor Dvorsky, Otto Stenberg, all those guys that are in the young 20s crowd. And that's not an age group that Robert Thomas fits anymore. So you wonder if that makes him, I don't know if expendable is the right word, because he still is their best player. Right. He does things other guys on the team cannot do, but if that hastens the conversation a little bit.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is it's, you know, he's not just maybe not a fit within this core, right? But like trying to find a fit on a trade partner for him with how complicated it would have to be it's just astounding, right? Like, who needs, one, a player like that, two, has the type of package it would take to land a player like that, and three, is a place that he would waive his no trade clause to go to? Like, rumors, and you never know, right? But like, man, the odds seem as much against that as they do the Blues going on a run and making the playoffs.
Sure, yeah, and I also, there's great points you made there, Nathan. I think if they do, seriously entertain a move like this, I wonder if it's more of a summer thing than a right now thing.
Right.
Because of the complexity here, because, if I'm the Blues and you're looking for a package in return, it's going to have to be, a hefty one. It's going to be a hefty one. I was talking to a scout the other day, and I said, well, if they trade Thomas, they're going to probably be looking at that Quinn Hughes deal minus maybe a piece, or, knocked down a little bit. He's not Quinn Hughes, but he is a 26-year-old number one center on a great contract, a fantastic, fantastic contract that has this year plus 5 more years. So you have a cost-controlled number one center at the age that he is, at a great contract number. Like, that's going to be costing a lot. And for the Wild, what they gave up in the deal with Vancouver, it was a lot. It was enough where the Canucks said, yeah, that's worth it to get rid of maybe the best player. It's arguably the best player in their franchise history. I know Pavel Bure's got a good argument there. The Sedins had a good argument there. But Quinn Hughes, what he has done on the back end there has been incredible. And, they gave up Zee Bouyam, a recent top draft pick that a lot of people think is going to be a huge star in the league. They gave up Liam Ogren, another recent first-round pick. They gave up, I believe it was another first-round, like maybe another actual first-round pick. They gave up Marco Rossi, who's a number one center on some teams. So they gave up probably the equivalent of 4 first-round assets, whether you want to call them, the 2 first-round prospects, the first round actual pick in this upcoming draft, plus Marco Rossi, one of those top centers that can play a role in the top 6. That's a lot. And I would wonder if the Blues look at that package and say, he's not Quinn Hughes, but he is on a great contract at a great age with great productivity. And I know this year has been a little bit wonky in terms of injuries, but for the most part, he generally stays pretty healthy. So it's a lot of things going that direction that would ask for a big, big, big ask from the Blues.
Do you think if Shen is moved here at the deadline, and of course his name's popped up in rumors too, do you think Thomas, should he stick around, is a captain candidate, or do you think something like that would factor into that at all in terms of possible trade discussions for Thomas?
Yeah, it's a good point, because you look at the alternate captains on this team right now. It's Robert Thomas, Justin Falk, and Colton Parayko. Justin Falk has his name in the trade circles as well. And even with those three, there's only one of them that wears the A all the time, and it's Robert Thomas, because Colton Parayko and Justin Falk split the A at home and on the road. One of them wears it at home, one of them wears it on the road. Thomas wears it all the time. And I do think that it can be a consideration, but I'm not entirely sure that that's part of the calculus if you look at the return that they might get. Or maybe that's already baked into the return. So, hey, this is a guy that's not only key to our team, but he could be looked at in the future as part of the leadership. This is what we're going to ask to replace that. Maybe it's baked in the return, but I don't think that they make that change midseason at all. We saw that a few years ago when they traded Ryan O'Reilly. Braden Schenn kind of became the de facto captain in terms of the guy who was sort of the spokesperson, the guy who would take the ceremonial puck drops at center ice like that. He kind of took on some of the responsibilities without having the C. And then they waited till just before training camp that following year to actually name him the captain. So if Chen does get traded, I don't see them naming a captain the rest of the year, to be quite honest. And I do think that there's a possibility that if they think that Robert Thomas isn't ready for it, that they just go with no captain until he is ready for it at some point, or until they believe that, you know, maybe a guy like Jake Neighbors is ready for it at a different point. So I'm not sure it's a slam dunk that he's a captain if they trade Braden Schenn immediately. And if he is, it would probably be the following year or even maybe after that. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of pieces in a discussion like this, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was going to be my next question for you. It's like, you know, you're involved, you're around, you're talking to, you know, not just players and GMs, but scouts and everybody else. What kind of sense do you get that this might actually happen, you know, or does it feel like it's mostly just chatter? Like, it, to me, the odds seem kind of astronomically against it, at least at this point, as you mentioned, maybe in the off season, but at the deadline, the deck seems stacked against it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a good answer for you, to be quite honest. I think we've gone through this at least the last 2 years with the Blues having a new big name out there. So 2 years ago was Pavel Buchnevich, who was going to be a UFA in the year after that trade deadline. And so he was big into trade talks, and Doug Armstrong and the Blues set a very high price for him. And ultimately, no one met that price. I do wonder how much the Blues tried to get Broberg and Holloway in a deal for Buchnevich from Edmonton. And then last year, Braden Schenn was their big name. Obviously, his no trade clause was a big factor in everything. But you know, they set a price, and it was high, and you know, nothing ended up happening in the end. But those are the two recent examples of big names that the Blues have had that have been in rumors that have had high prices attached that didn't end up getting traded for one reason or the other. And so Robert Thomas now, I don't know if I would even say that he's on the trade market or whatnot, right. But I do believe that the Blues are truly listening on everything, and really anyone that's above that age group that we talked about earlier.
How much is Steen involved in all this? He's got to be intimately involved, I would imagine, as the last trade deadline before he takes the reins.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the decision-making process, he is very involved.
He's bigly involved. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked to Doug Armstrong and he said Alexander Steen is part of the decision-making group that also includes Tim Taylor, Ryan Miller, Peter Chiarelli, Keith Tkachuk, Al MacInnis, kind of that big group. But on bid decisions that will impact his team that he takes over in the summer, like I think Doug Armstrong said this. He said, if I can't convince Alex Steen of the move, then we're not doing it. And so I think that's a good way to look at it. I think right now the difference between the two of them is that Doug Armstrong's the one making all the phone calls. He's calling all the other GMs. He's having the discussions with them. He's doing the negotiations. He's figuring out what the interest level is, what they have out there. Whereas Steen kind of hears it from Doug Armstrong. He hears that from him and says, oh, okay, all right, that's what do we got here. And so I think that'll change in the summer when Steen takes over and suddenly he's the one making the phone calls, and Doug Armstrong's not as hands-on in that kind of area. But I do think that if there is a move that gets made, it gets done with Alexander Steen's approval, particularly if it is trading the best player.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm certain of that. As you were describing the, you know, he's the one who makes the phone calls, I was envisioning the scene in Moneyball where Brad Pitt is like, you know, jamming a Twinkie into his mouth as Jonah Hill is calling asking for more money. That's just, I just imagine Steen and it's Jonah Hill and
Doug Armstrong. Yeah, he's asking for a Twinkie in his face. Rendon, you know?
Yeah, change his clothes, send him over.
Yeah, and then he does
except in, the except fist, in this the place. Pump. Yeah. It's just Steen with a blues cap on, just like that. That was exactly what I envisioned.
That's right. Yeah. So I mean, we'll see what happens, but that's a little bit of chatter that's out there right now. You know what? There's two big checkpoints coming up in this season. One is February 5. That's the Olympic break. And two is March 6th. That's the trade deadline. And those will provide kind of more clarity on what we're at with this team, what it looks like in the future in particular, and what their plan is moving forward. So we'll find out more soon enough. But for right now, all we got is chatter, Nathan.
Yeah, well, you know, you know me, I love chatter. That's the thing I'm best at, honestly. You know, it's not just we've got those two dates coming up, those two checkpoints. It made me think, you know, we've got this break coming up and we've got the deadline coming up after that. Will trade discussions stop during the Olympics? Like, could a guy be traded while he's at the Olympics?
So there is a freeze. There is a trade freeze that goes into effect, I believe, on February 4. So like teams can still talk, they can still, you know, kind of talk things through and hammer out deals and stuff like that, but they can't actually execute things, until later on. I don't remember the date that the freeze ends, but it does start on February 4 and then goes till, I would imagine, something like the 23rd or 24th or something like that.
Could be a hot couple of weeks after we come back from the Olympics.
I mean, it's after they come back for the Olympics, like, so the Blues first game back is February 26th. And
that's my birthday.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday. Yeah. They play.
Happy birthday to me. Welcome back, Blues.
They'll play the Kraken on the 26th. And then the 27th is the next day as calendars work. That's a Friday. 1 week after the 27th is March 6th. That's the trade deadline. So they have eight days from when they start play again after the Olympics until the trade deadline. So we'll get a good idea of where they're at the break. And even, you know, they do practice for, you know, a week and a half before playing again. The rest of the team will practice, I believe, February 17, I believe they go back to practice. So they'll just do it like last year where they'll practice without Binnington, Pareko, Suter, Broberg, and Dvorsky. And they'll just kind of hold practices that way. So the other big piece of news this week in the Blue Circle was the Springfield coaching change. So Springfield, the AHL affiliate of the Blues, they fired Steve Konowalchuk, who was in his second year behind the bench of the Thunderbirds, and Steve Ott, assistant coach in the NHL for the Blues since 2017, recently promoted to associate head coach. He's been named the coach in Springfield through the rest of the season. Now, Nathan, it was kind of an unorthodox move. You know, Steve Ott's been in the NHL for close to a decade as an assistant on the Blues staff, but he doesn't have any head coaching experience. And it's been a few times that the Blues have passed him over, right? Mm-hmm. So when they fired Craig Berube, they took on Drew Bannister from Springfield because of the head coaching experience. That Steve Ott didn't get that job. When they fired Bannister, it was to hire Jim Montgomery because of his past experience as a head coach. And so Steve Ott didn't get that job. I don't know this for a fact, but I would be shocked if he did not a interview for some head coach openings this past summer, Steve Ott. And I don't know the exact reasoning behind why teams did or did not hire him, but I would imagine that some of them saw that he did not have head coaching experience at any level,
right,
and didn't want to take a chance on that. So kind of a weird move when you look at it that way. I actually got a text from a buddy, said, "Hey, is this a promotion or a demotion for Steve Ott?" Because I've seen it go the other way. I've seen it actually happen when Jim Montgomery got fired in Dallas. They did the whole staff remodel and they brought up the head coach from their AHL team to be an assistant in the NHL. So I've seen it go the other way. And now I've seen it go assistant in the NHL to head coach in the AHL. But it should serve him well in the future.
Yeah, it's going to do, well, presumably anyway, do wonders for his career. And the thing that I wondered about is, you know, he's been in the Blues system so long. He's so familiar with the guys who are on the NHL ice now. You know, I wondered how much, you know, this can build kind of consistency, more familiarity with the expectations at the NHL level, and maybe get some of these AHL guys, maybe not, you know, guys that are not already ready, right? But like guys that are close, get them a little closer before they make that next step to the NHL. I thought, you know, bringing that, you know, philosophy down, you know, more specifically with Ott, you know, to Montgomery, you know, that would, I was just curious about how that might work out and how that might help players.
Yeah, and it's, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it goes, because
right.
I don't know how Steve Ott's going to be as a head coach, particularly in such a short 3 months. How much can he actually impact? What kind of moves, changes can he make? Because that team is being impacted just as much as this team by injuries, because you know they don't have a handful of players that they would have normally had. You know, Stenberg and Dvorsky have obviously been in the NHL for quite some time now. Earlier on the season, when you know they had Kastamaki up for a little bit, they had Matt Luff up for a little bit. Hugh McGain was up. They lost was supposed to be their starting goaltender in the preseason when Colton Ellis was claimed by Buffalo, and they've had Hunter Skinner up in the NHL for a cup of coffee. So they've had some things outside of their control impact their roster. But it is a team that has for the last year and a half been outshot pretty badly on a yeah. regular basis. They get outplayed on night to night. You know, even when I looked at this year, on average, they have been outshot by 8.5 shots a game. That is bad. Yeah. They hit a lot of 32.5 and they put 24 on net. Even last game, against Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, they got outshot 48-27. The 48 shots were, I believe, a season high that they've given up. And obviously, they're not getting outshot by 21 each night, but 8.5 is a big number. So interested to see what changes there. They're currently on a 5-game losing streak. They play Toronto tonight, and we'll see how that all goes in the AHL. And get to the last topic at the net front here. That'll be another injury, but this one's a pretty scary one to Oscar Sundquist, who suffers a skate cut above his ankle. Jim Montgomery said after the game in Edmonton that it did not get his Achilles, so yeah. That's good news in the long-term prognosis, but still just a very scary incident that goes on.
Yeah, I, when I saw Parayko and Walker calling over for medical attention, my first thought was, oh my goodness, this is Erik Karlsson. Like, this is bad, you know. But, you know, he was able to get up and get off the ice with some help. And so that was encouraging, at least, you know, considering my first thought. And then, you know, finding out that he definitely did not cut the Achilles was great. And, you know, I just, man, I couldn't do it. Hockey players are a different breed, man.
Yeah, it is tough when you see that reaction from Parayko in particular, because they're all looking down. They're looking down at the ice, seeing what's going on. Hey, Sonny, what's going on? How you doing? And then they see,
kind of freak out a little bit. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And you see them kind of wave over a lot. They wave over quickly. and get him off the ice. And it's an odd thing that you don't see too often, but you see occasionally. Obviously, it's a fast moving sport with blades on the boots. Last year, Radek Faksa got a skate cut around his groin, missed a handful of games, including the Winter Classic. So it's an injury that occurs every once in a while. And when you think about the Gabriel Landeskog one, where he got cut on his leg, I think it was around his knee area, and that ended up being a one that kind of forced him out for a couple of years before he was back on the ice. So it can be scary. It can be pretty dangerous. Thankfully for the Blues, Oscar Sundquist is going to be okay, relatively speaking, and not kind of suffer the structural damage of a torn Achilles.
Is there not, I mean, you go back a couple of years ago, 22, 23, 24, when Adam Johnson died, you know, there was suddenly, after that happened, there was a lot of attention around the neck guards, you know, that mm-hmm. players, some had been wearing, but more began wearing in the wake of that. Is there nothing like that for like legs? Is it just
so the uniform? They do have like, I think they're the Kevlar socks or that kind of protects around the boot area, around the ankle. So guys do wear those. I'm not sure if Sundquist wears them or how things get through them, but there are anti-cut resistant things that some guys wear on their wrists, on their ankles. And obviously there's some guys that wear the neck guards as well. So there are certain aspects you can take to kind of mitigate some of this, but some of it's just a freak accident.
Yeah, that's terrible. Do we know exactly how long? I mean, it's pretty deep cut, right? So like how long
I don't know.
Be out or just day to day, as long as oof, man.
Yeah.
So Alex said, hockey players are a different breed, man. I couldn't do it. I mean, that's one of the things that I've grown to love about the sport is just how tough these dudes are, you know, and that's part of it, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we're hoping everyone has a safe and warm weekend. Everyone gets their prep done in time and rides it out and does okay with the storm this week. And wishing well for everyone out there, especially in Blues territory in Missouri here. So for Nathan, I'm Matt. This was Net Front Presence. We'll see you next week.